Hello guys, I'm back. This is Exploring Classical Music Podcast. Lika is here. I'm so sorry I've been away for such a long time. I was really busy at work, but I'm back with this new episode for you, the Romantic Era, and I'm super excited to present some of the most interesting information for you guys, and let's get straight into it. When I wished to sing of love, it turned to sorrow, and when I wished to sing of sorrow, it was transformed for me into love. Franz Schubert said that. To send light into the darkness of men's hearts, such is the duty of an artist. Robert Schumann said that. Music embodies a feeling without forcing it to contend and combine with thought, as it is forced in most arts and especially in the art of words. That was Franz or Frederick Liszt. Now, there is a reason why I read those quotes to you guys, and hopefully you understand by the end of this episode as to why. Today's episode is about Romantic Era, and I'll talk about our theme music for today at the end of this episode, so stay tuned. If you happen to listen to the Classical Era episode, you will recall that Classical Era is all about clarity, rationality, logic, and optimism. The Romantic Era is different, I would even say a complete opposite. It is all about emotions, drama, passion, individuality, and even pessimism. Ah, I forgot to mention, how could I? The Romantic Era lasted from approximately, emphasis on approximately, between 1820 and 1900. Now, I don't know history all that well, but from what I recall from many years ago when my music literature teacher answered one of our questions that we asked in class as to why did such polar shift happen, she said that due to an enormous amount of revolutions, wars, hardships, hunger, and other things that humanity faced within a relatively short period of time, there was a need for people to express their emotions through various means, including music. Another point I really need to emphasize here is that there is quite a bit of disagreement regarding who exactly was the first romantic composer. A lot of resources, including a bunch that I reference in the description for this episode, claim that Beethoven gave birth to the Romantic Era. Some sources and people claim that Beethoven should be classified as a completely separate composer, not belonging to either classical or romantic eras. And many sources say that Beethoven is one of the classical composers. And to be honest, from many years ago, from my favorite music teacher, whose name I of course don't remember because this stuff happened 1,000 years ago, she also claimed that Beethoven should probably be within the classical era realm. So, just to show her some respect, I'll keep Beethoven there. Even though he's very different from Haydn and Mozart, I will keep Beethoven in the classical era, and I will say that Schubert was the first Romantic Era composer. To some extent, I honestly am glad that there is no agreement as to when Romantic Era exactly started. My listeners who still remember the first episode will probably recall the fact that I do not understand the rigid boundaries about who belongs to which generation. I will never understand that. So I'm all in for the discussion about where Beethoven belongs and when Romantic Era started. But for the purposes of this podcast, the Exploring Classical Music podcast, let's just stick to this, even though this may not be what a lot of people may think. The new romantic notions that I've talked about, all this expression of emotion and pessimism, of course affected the music form itself. The main focus of composers became a smaller form of music, again, the opposite of the classical era. Some may recall the classical era composers focused on large forms of music, specifically sonatas, symphonies, and operas. That doesn't mean they didn't compose small forms, such as variations, musical moments, and other things. Romantic composers focused on smaller pieces so much so that new forms of small forms of music were created, such as nocturnes, romances, etudes, polonaises, etc. That doesn't mean they didn't compose large forms. They did, very much so. In fact, some romantic composers are mostly known for their operas than anything else, such as Puccini, Verdi, Berlioz, and others. But what's true with the romantic era is that the rules for composing were really changing. If the Baroque era had very strict canons of composition, most of which were put forward by the church, then classical era broke a lot of those rules and made music more societal in nature. The time when music became an entertainment than anything else, the romantic era went even further, and a lot of composers were either pushing the boundaries of music composition dogmas or coming up with their own unique styles. Don't get me wrong, there was still a lot of structure to the Romantic era music. It is just more rich. There are more variations and more freedoms for interpretation. Some professionals, whether musicians, composers, or professors, even separate Romantic composers into two categories, the ones that were relatively sticking to some rules of music composition and just pushed the boundaries of imaginable at the time, or the other category of composers who completely went nuts. This podcast, while informative, it is not ridiculously technical, so I won't bother talking about that. I want to give you guys some context so that it can open you to more exploration and excite you about classical music, but not to bore you to death, because it can be very boring. So during the Romantic era, the music was still societal, but it went even beyond just being societal. Like in classical era, there were still a lot of performances, a lot of operas, theatres, a lot of composers, and it was a big deal for people to attend those things. But in addition to this, because of the existence of smaller forms of music, practically every person was able to play an instrument, and at home people would just gather around together and perform little concerts for themselves, just to entertain themselves and spend the time together. It was very common for a family of however many people, 5, 6, 7 people. I don't know how large families tended to be during the Romantic era, but they would come together and play a little concert or a little composition of Schubert or of Schumann, where somebody would play Chopin's pieces. That was the way that they spend the times together and spend their evenings. Nowadays, we browse the internet in the evenings after work when we're tired, or watch TV, or Skype with each other, or something like that. But in the past, they obviously didn't have that, so they would just, after work, being tired, wanting to relax, they would perform the pieces that they wanted to perform together, and a bunch of people knew how to play instruments. This is the time when music really entered the lives of almost every single person. It was difficult to imagine for people to live a day without music, just like it is for us nowadays. So let's summarize some of the most important context that I think you guys should be aware of when listening to Romantic era music pieces. First, it is all about emotions and expressing them as much as possible. If classical era music compositions were meant to show off the beauty of instruments, the technique of a composer, the elegance of composition, the intelligence of musical pieces, the context of music was mostly taken from folklore stories, with some emotions, of course. Romantic era compositions were not about that at all. Practically every piece in Romantic era, regardless of size, small, large, sonata, nocturne, menuet, waltz, all of them had a deep meaning, almost always. There always was a story to tell. It wasn't just about showing off, it was about telling a story. And the stories are honestly kind of typical. They're mostly about love, betrayal, grief of some kind. The main romantic hero is usually actually not like everybody else. He's not understood by society, he has dreams that are unattainable, and he needs to escape. And usually the escape happens in those compositions, especially in larger forms of music, just because there is more space to tell you the full story. And that main hero usually escapes to either the past, usually to some medieval era or some mysterious ancient time, or the hero can also escape to a fantasy world, maybe something like a fairy tale. Or sometimes the escape can happen to some exotic place or a foreign country that no one ever heard of. So these are some of the main places where the main hero finds peace and happiness or gets completely disappointed in everything. Sometimes he may stay there or come back to where he started. So you see, now you don't even need to listen to anything. You kind of know what the deal is. I'm just kidding. A lot of this is subject to your own interpretation, of course. The reason I've still mentioned the common theme is because there used to be a thing called program music. While this was kind of a thing for many years before, during the Romantic era, this got into a whole new level. Program music is basically a program where music is tied to a particular literature piece or an art piece or both. And most of them during that time had a typical romantic notion. Romantic era program music was very close in tone and mood of what it was tied to. Keep in mind that not all the romantic era music was program music, and other eras, baroque and classical, had program music too, but it did get much more popular during the romantic era. Absolute music is not program music. It isn't tied to any literature work or artwork. It just stands as a perfectly independent piece by itself and evokes its own emotions, and listeners are free to come up with their own story or just enjoy the music. Before we look at what program music is and its types, let's briefly discuss the musical instruments of the Romantic era. The need to express emotions and a technical progress evolved a lot of musical instruments, as well as the technique of playing those instruments. Just take piano. Chopin and Liszt, I think, completely blew out the realms of what was possible to produce on piano. This is probably the time when piano became one of the most famous and difficult instruments to play. No offense to other instruments, please. I am biased. They did have different goals, though. Chopin wanted to show the uniqueness of piano and showcase that no other single instrument can be as unique as piano and produce the unique sound and emotion. Liszt, on the other hand, wanted to showcase the greatness of piano and prove to the world that piano is the greatest instrument of all, that no orchestra can even compare to the strength and ability of piano. While Bach had already showed the strength of piano, keep in mind that Bach was not even remembered by the general public until Mendelssohn organized one of his concerts. So both Chopin and Liszt really made a dent in the history of piano as a musical instrument. Regardless of intentions, they both did push boundaries of technical skill that can be achieved through years of training, sweat, blood, and tears. A similar thing happened to the violin. While Vivaldi from the Baroque era showcased the ability of the violin well enough, Paganini elevated it to the next level completely. Similar things happened to other instruments, but more in the realm of orchestra. I think it is more difficult to play Romantic era pieces in an orchestra than the Classical era, though this is apparently arguable. Nevertheless, as the 19th century progressed, a lot of instruments got better, musicians got more skillful, and music forms and freedoms demanded a more virtuoso kind of approach. For example, as wind instruments improved, more winds were added to the orchestra, and their parts became more difficult, more interesting, and definitely more important. Improvements in the mechanics of the piano also helped it replace the harpsichord to become the instrument that to many people is the symbol of the Romantic era music. Now, on to the program music example, or analysis rather, I think. There are actually three main types of program music that existed in the Romantic era. The first one is the tone poem, also called a symphonic poem, which was created by Liszt. The second one is the concert overture, and the third is the program symphony. So very briefly about all of them. The tone poem or the symphonic poem, whichever one you like better, did not exist at all before Liszt. And they usually involve a large orchestra and are very free in structure. As far as I know, usually these poems reflect the mood and character of a particular hero from an art or literary work at a very specific time and focus on his feelings and emotions at that time. Though this doesn't always hold true, there are always exceptions and different composers put their own twist on tone poems. The second one is the concert overture. These are very different from the opera overtures, and they're not connected to each other at all. The overture is actually for opera, like the normal overture. I don't think that any concerts from the classical era had any concert overtures, to be honest. The concert overtures kind of existed in their own right during the Romantic era, and they were played at concerts usually, which is of no surprise. And sometimes they were played on their own and sometimes before a concert. However, if the regular overture for opera plays a role of a summary of the entire opera, similar to an annotation of a book, the concert overture, not so much. And the third type is the program symphony, which is basically just a symphony, but it ties to some external work, as I said. Because Romantic era compositions were tied to so many different works, just a regular symphony couldn't really, I guess, describe the purpose. For example, Mozart's Fifth Symphony would not be a program symphony. It would be an absolute standing music piece because it's not tied to anything else. It's just a, you know, symphony number 5. And in the Romantic era, there were many symphonies that actually told a story, and the story was taken from some literature or art. Unfortunately, this episode is already getting a bit long, so I'm not gonna analyze any examples of program music. This is for next time. At least something to look forward to. But I couldn't leave you with nothing completely, right? So the music track that you've been hearing this full episode is actually one piece, and specifically it is Symphonie Fantastique by Berlioz. And guess what? It is a good example of program music. I will not analyze it, but in a few words, it is not actually based on a literary work. It is actually an autobiographical story of the composer love for Harriet Smithen, who was an actress who Berlioz saw in theaters a few times and fell in love with blindly. And he describes basically his emotional torment because she didn't pay any attention to him. She didn't respond to any of his letters. So basically just a typical love story. I will not say any more than that. This is a separate topic for later, and I don't want to break it out to you all because there is a plot twist. Unless you already know or choose to research, I hope to cover this at some future point and still keep it interesting. But this whole thing has an interesting ending, for sure. Speaking of future episodes, I know I've been so long overdue with this one. I've just been very busy at work, and this podcast at this point in time is nothing more than just a hobby for me. So please keep listening, liking, share this podcast with friends and family and people who you think may be interested in this stuff. This is the only motivator for me to keep doing this. I honestly received a lot of really good feedback, and that was the biggest reason why I actually decided to do this episode this time. Otherwise, if I didn't get as much in listenership in the past month and as many good comments, I would probably still not do anything. I really want to thank all my audience who does this, because it definitely is the biggest motivator and incentive for me to sit down and do this podcast after work. And I really hope that I keep doing this for a long time, and I enjoy this, and I hope that you enjoyed this episode and will keep enjoying all the future episodes about classical music. I am really looking forward to it, and I hope you as well. And just in case I'm late with the next episode again, I just want to apologize in advance. And, well, that's about it. All right, goodbye now.